Welcome, friends. This is Red Ice Creations Radio. Thank you for tuning in to our broadcast. We are recording from Sweden. My name is Henrik Palmgren. I am the editor and webmaster of redicecreations.com, a website dedicated to news, research, and exploration of all kinds of topics and areas that we consider to be not only interesting, but also of great importance in these interesting times that we do live in. Stop by the website often and check out our many different sections that we got up there. Much to read, see, and of course listen to. Also check out the forum and join in on the discussions. This radio program is online with a new show every Thursday and Sunday. If you want to backtrack, just head into our archives and tune in. Today we have a great guest with us. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show, the Synchro Mystic Master, Jake Kotze, who joins us. Jake, of course, is behind the blog, thebravenewworldorder.blogspot.com, and this is something that you must get into if you not already have. Since we last spoke with Jake about 5 months ago, I think that Jake not only has continued his excellent work, but he has also developed it and taken it even further. He has also entered into the world of video production and he has converted, I guess, his work into video format, which is just excellent, and I hope we can get into that a little bit later, talk more about that. I think that Jake really has become a prominent researcher of the esoteric and the mystic, and of course the synchro mystic. But it's great to have you back on the show, Jake. Welcome, and thank you for spending some time with us today.
Thank you, Henrik. I'm glad to be here.
It's great to have you back. All things good on your end?
Oh yeah, very well. Yeah. And you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Good.
As I said, Jake, I think that, you know, you just in the last few months here have grown in your work tremendously in what you do, and I think a lot of people, including myself, really have taken in or almost kind of adopted, I guess, your way of looking at things as a method to decode seemingly hidden messages or unconnected dots around us. And what I think that you have shown us is that you can look at basically everything in a symbolic context. And what I really appreciate about your work is that you kind of provide a philosophical concept or an idea behind what you do, a model, if you will. And this idea can actually be applied to all kinds of things by everyone who is aware of how to apply it. And I really wanted to start there today, talk about your philosophy and kind of get into your mindset, how you connect the things that you do and really dissect it, I guess. So tell us about your approach and about your concept of synchromysticism for those people who aren't aware of it.
Okay, well, synchromysticism is very similar, and you can tell by the name that it's connected to synchronicity. Like Jung was saying that, you know, some coincidences aren't just merely meaningless, that they have meaning. And I've sort of tried to take it a little bit further because I believe that no coincidence is trivial, and that if you look into anything that seems connected, you can find something meaningful inside that. And it's a tricky thing not to seem crazy when you're sort of pointing this thing out to people, but I really do believe it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that this is, again, if you're able to lay out this idea or this concept or this, you know, pattern of how to look upon things, it does seem more crazy, as you put it, because you give a background that people can apply and then themselves discover if this is, you know, something you know that they further can elaborate on. But in regards to, you know, developing this idea that you have, how far back did you know, was this recently just when you started the blog that you started to develop this, or was this kind of developed during the process of when you began writing your articles?
No, I've had a fascination with coincidence my whole life, and I from a very early age realized that there's sort of a message in the coincidence, or that if there's a hint towards, I don't know, the way that ultimate reality works, or that sort of an encoded, if you will, mm-hmm. message in your very surroundings that you can sort of learn to read into by following your, you know, intuition and the coincidences around you. Hmm. And there was actually a particular incident when I was young that I would say was like the first coincidence that made me realize this this sort of insight, and I could tell you about it.
Sure. Would you like to share it? I'd love to hear it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I think I was like 11 or 12 or something. I was at the coast on vacation with my family, and my mother took me to a bookstore, and there were a bunch of secondhand National Geographics lying on the floor, and they were like, I don't know, R5 each, and she said, pick two randomly, and they were like from all different eras, you know, National mm-hmm. Geographic's been around forever, so
sure.
I just look at the covers, and I'm a young kid, and I decide this one looks interesting, and this one looks interesting, and I decide to pick two, and let me just get this phone
sure.
here. So I pick two randomly.
Yeah.
And then I realized as I was reading through the one that there was a story inside about Da Vinci's horse. And mm. I read in the next one, and they were both separated 15 years from each other in chronological order. And the other one was referring back to the first National Geographic that I had picked up, and it was talking about Da Vinci's horse, and so was the second one. Hmm. And I thought, this is a weird coincidence that both these randomly picked National Geographics
yeah.
would be referring to the same horse and the same issue. And they're like 15 years separated. And I thought, that's pretty peculiar. And then that evening on the news, they had the exact same story about Da Vinci's horse, this guy who was making the sculpture of Da Vinci's horse, hmm. fixing. Yeah, but based on the original plans that Da Vinci had for this horse.
Amazing. So do you think that was kind of the communication to you, or a hint to you?
That's right. To me, it seemed like the first, if I go back in my memory, time that I realized, whoa, there's this eerie interconnectedness between all things. And
sure.
Every now and then, if you like, people obviously all the time experience coincidences. Like, you think of a song and you turn on the radio and it's there, you know. Mm. And I just think there's a lot more to that. You should listen to the words of the song, or, you know, look at everything around you and be observant.
Sure. So I mean, you're talking about a pattern that is out there, and a meaningful coincidences in that sense. But how subtle do you think one can get with this? As you say, even a tuning on the radio, listen to a song. Do you think that there is a message that we, you know, can learn from or grow from? Or I mean, what's your take on the point of all of this, so to speak?
Well, I think the point to me is personally that you begin to learn that you and your environment are not separate, and that everything you're thinking and that you're seeing is sort of part of what is happening inside your mind in a way.
Sure.
But also, there is no separation really between your mind and your environment. It's sort of like a false westernized way of looking at the world.
Yeah.
And it sometimes bleeds through, and that's sort of the coincidence. You know, you'll have something going on in your mind, and then you'll see it in your environment, and you'll be like, hey, that's just a coincidence. But no, it's actually you're realizing the trick, the cosmic giggle, which is that there is no difference. There is no separation between the object and the subject, or the observer and the viewer, you know.
Yeah,
and the
sure.
thing being viewed. It's sort of Zen. It's really Zen, but it's learning to use that Zen insight to navigate through, you know, this world that we live in.
Sure, absolutely. And I mean, there is philosophical ideas or concept that all of the things around us actually, it's a reflection of yourself, or what you need to be kind of subjected to at that particular moment in order to, you know, get help or get a hint or something, or something like that. But
yeah.
Have you kind of, you know, pondered upon this further in regards to, do you think that this actually is a reflection of only yourself, or is there kind of a play going on between you and the higher, you know, consciousness, I guess?
Yeah, well, it does seem to operate as a game, sort of
sure.
a game between you and your, I don't know, your higher self, that's constantly like knocking at your door and inviting you to, you know, open up your mind and your eyes to like this interconnected universe that you are embedded in, like every moment becomes meaningful and beautiful and worth investigating carefully. I mean, you have to use your sense of humor not to go crazy if you start to look at things this way, because you know, if you, it's like the movie Beautiful Mind, where you start seeing patterns in every second word in Time magazine, and you think the Illuminati is sending you messages or something, and you know, you might go crazy if you do not you know, use your sense of humor and also your intuition and your, you know, humble humility when you're dealing with these matters, because I think a lot of people have probably been locked up that have opened up their minds in this sort of area and then just gone crazy.
Yeah.
They just started, you know, talking about seeing patterns in the static on TV. There are patterns in the static on TV, but you gotta learn how to integrate it into your, you know, normal life. Otherwise, you know, you could go nuts.
Well, I totally agree. And again, I think that we, at least as you say, here in the Western world, are so foreign to this idea that that there is an interconnectedness in everything. And I think that this is what actually drives people in that sense to the, you know, going mad in that sense, because we are conditioned to believe that there is no meaning or no, you know, higher meaning. There are people, of course, who have a religious background, seeing it that you know, that obviously there is a God behind everything. But I don't think that it is expressed in this kind of, you know, intricate way that every, you know, minute detail actually is a play in a communication. But you know, would you incorporate the idea of the, let's say, holographic universe? I don't know if you read about this. Would you incorporate this into that idea of you know, the overmind, or your ability to communicate with yourself on a higher plane?
Well, I see it as everything around me, and it's like we're all this one creature with different heads. It's like we're some sort of multiple-headed hydra. And we're all acting out this drama and slowly but surely becoming conscious of it. And stuff like the internet is, you know, bringing that, making that more vivid. And the idea that it's an illusion or a hologram, I see as a little bit dangerous, perhaps, because it's more that, you know, it's all one instead of the idea that it's an illusion. Like that's one way of looking at it that I think is erroneous. It's sort of like a way of trying to escape from the idea that we're all one, is that you're thinking of that it's an illusion, or that there is, it's like every moment is significant, not like this thing that's behind it. It's like right now you are experiencing that ultimate moment, you're just not realizing it. That, or letting yourself realize it.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, that's a good take on it, I think. Do you, I mean, in regards to the issue of individuality in at the same time, I mean, these are like, in one sense, I think, having two contradictory ideas, holding them, you know, together, but they both work at the same time. I totally agree with what you say, and I you know, agree on that fact that I think that we could tie this back to the one, so to speak. But at the same time, we experience this individually. Do you have difficulties to kind of, you know, separate these two, or are they contradictory in that sense?
I think it's just our minds are so geared in Western society to think of things in, you know, either, or yes or no, or good or bad, that we're constantly trying to figure out, you know, are we individuals or are we one? Are we good or are we bad? Are we happy or are we sad? Instead of, you know, just coming into the realization that you're all of those things at once. But it's so insidious. You will sit forever and contemplate, you know, the meaning of you know, one versus many, and,
sure,
and until you come into the realization of it. And it's a game I'm obviously still playing with myself, because if I if I have an identity called Jake Kotze and I do work, then I feel like I'm still playing a game with myself and my environment.
That's interesting. You know, I also keep bumping up to the idea in regards to free will, because it seems like we are, in a sense, playing out a game, and often or not, I mean, these coincidences come to us as an external force, or at least they come to us in that way that we interpret them as something external, and it might be that it is something internal or something that is part of our, you know, overmind in that sense. But in regards to free will, do you see this is a conundrum, so to speak? How's your view
actually,
on it?
It's actually not a conundrum, but it's a very valid sort of thing, and that I will have to remind myself 10 times a day about, you know, how it really works. And then even like probably for weeks I'll go when I forget it again. But it's sort of like Alan Watts totally explained this. I don't know if you're familiar with Alan Watts. He was a Zen teacher, and he was really great at sort of untying these knots in your mind. Mm-hmm. And he was sort of explaining the problem with free will is there's no one to have free will because you're not an individual. There is, it's like determinism. There is no individual to be determined. So there is the conundrum doesn't really exist. It's just, again, us trying to put things into boxes that causes the problem to begin with. So it's more like the question itself is part of the problem. And that's sort of a Zen mystical insight, really. It's the snake eating its own tail over and over.
Ah, yeah, I see. You know, that's interesting in regards also to, I think it was Terence McKenna who was talking about the necessity for us to being able to also divide up things. And here, I think that the ego comes in. I think that he simply stated that it's a good thing in regards to that we have the ego, because it prevents you from, you know, putting food into someone else's mouth instead of your own, you know.
Yes. It's a tool that we're using, and something that we're having to learn to discard as we, you know, move up into this speculated higher state of consciousness that it feels to me like we are moving into. But I mean, depending on what you're looking at the moment, like if you look at CNN, you'll think, oh, we're about to blow ourselves up. And if you read some, you know, good website or something, you know, look at a good work of art, you might think, wow, we're about to reach cosmic illumination, or the aliens are about to contact us all en masse or something like that. Then you watch CNN again and you're like, oh, it's all over. So, if anything's happening, it's great.
I totally agree. It feels like we are subjected to so many, you know, different views, or I guess as Robert Anton Wilson would say, reality tunnels. You know, and we can pick and choose, I guess, where we kind of want to be in regards to our view of the world, because I remember going back again to the Mayan calendar, reading the work of Carl Johan Kalleman, a Swedish scientist who have decoded, basically in his own interpretation, the Mayan calendar, and kind of picked it apart and you know, stated that we are in these different development stages and so forth. And he expressed the idea that we are, you know, going into, you know, more and more are becoming available in regards to, you know, how we view things, and also, of course, how, you know, all of time is kind of speeding up. And I think that being in the world, and as you say, turning on, you know, CNN in one instance, and then turning to something else, we can, you know, quickly flash between all of these different realities. Would you agree on that?
I definitely agree with that, yeah. It's sort of, you have to learn to be able to shift between different belief systems and use the correct one, the correct model, the one that fits the information the best at any given point, and then, you know, to switch back to another one and then not, you know, get it all muddled so that you feel like you're schizophrenic or something. But I think people are starting to develop these techniques, and they're just, it's becoming like a natural process that might be invisible to the individual, might not even, you know, have the vocabulary to explain it to themselves. But things like the internet is sort of like giving you all these different reality tunnels to view.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the mainstream one by going to CNN. You can look at the more subversive one by going to InfoWars, or you can go to the crazy side by going to my blog or somebody else's work. You know? Or not the crazy one, but the far more like, I don't know, fractal and
sure.
emergent sort of. I don't know how to describe it, but
sure.
there's a few people I feel who are following this new sort of way of seeing everything as interconnected. Like Goro at Etemenanki also does this sort of work, and he's got an amazing reality tunnel. And it's sort of like you have to learn to see through a person's eyes to decode their work,
yeah.
and then you know learn to see through another person's eyes every time you're looking at their work and their art. You know, so
absolutely.
we're doing it consciously all day.
You know, I totally agree. It also feels like a lot of people are beginning to, you know, in regards to that we're able to have these kinds of communications and of course over the internet in that sense, but we're also, as we go along here, developing this, you know, view upon the world very, you know, very, very quickly, I guess. It is almost to me incorporating into our world view another, you know, dimension basically.
That's right. It's really amazing what is happening if you think about the internet. It's sort of like a psychedelic drug. It's with the definition of psychedelic, the way I understand it, it's what makes your mind visible. And it's like all these people's minds all over the world that are contributing to the internet, they're becoming visible. Like you can see my blog, I can see Red Ice Radio, I can see your thoughts taking shape. Like the network is building this mind that is almost invisible because we can't find it except from the screens, you know. And we're able to see each other's thought processes. It's making the global mind visible, and it's really fascinating and bizarre and sometimes scary, sometimes wonderful. It's all things. It's really amazing.
Sure.
I think a brilliant person to research the sort of the technological aspect of this is Mark Pesce. I don't know if you're familiar with.
No. Tell me about him.
Well, he invented VRML as the virtual reality modeling language,
mm-hmm.
and he was working on the virtual reality headsets when they were coming out. When everybody thought we were all going to wear these headsets and we'd be like in this virtual reality world like in 5 years, but then that just never happened.
Hmm.
And that was because they realized that the screen was going to make you blind after a while if you stare at it so close to your eyes.
Oh my God.
Depth perception problems, so they had to stop that idea. And
Mark
Pesce knew personally Terence McKenna, and you can listen to lectures where he's talking with Terence McKenna at seminars. And he has his own blog, and he has great work, and he writes a lot about nanotechnology, futurism. Mm-hmm. Also, he has videos online. He's the best person to research this stuff.
Interesting. Mark Pesce, you said.
Mark Pesce, yeah. I'd look into it. He's got great videos on Google Video, etc.
Interesting.
All about, you know, how Wikipedia and YouTube and all these things are changing the collective mind and, you know, the way we share information and ideas and communication, just really in a really sort of spiritual way. He's doing this incredible work. It's good.
Ah, interesting. Sounds very interesting. You know, I read this from one of your postings in regards to Wikipedia, and I think that it's very true. I've been, you know, ever since I you know catched on to Wikipedia and kind of, you know, actually realized what it actually is doing with our, you know, in that sense, collective knowledge. And even though we have this problem, of course, with, you know, if things are true or not on that side, so forth. I think that at this moment is beyond, you know, the issue, because it's interesting to look upon Wikipedia as an entity in itself that actually incorporates, you know, our collective knowledge of, you know, this is where we say collectively, you know, this is what's going on this subject or whatever. And
it's a consensus. It's a way of viewing what the consensus opinion is about a given subject.
Exactly.
It's not going to give you the answer, like nothing will, but I mean, it'll give you an overview, which is amazing, of, you know, what the rough average is of a topic. And it's like movie databases, the same thing. The whole planet voting on a movie and giving it an aggregate score. It's beautiful. Because even if you don't agree with it, you can go see what the collective mind thinks about
exactly,
a movie.
Exactly, exactly.
And they're all beginning to get linked with each other. You know, Wikipedia is becoming linked with YouTube, and YouTube's going to get linked with this, and Google, and it's all going to, you know, this. It's going to be, I don't know, and it's all happening like lightning fast. So
it is.
Hard to keep track, but it's fascinating, and when you really start to think about it, it's breathtaking.
You know, this takes me into the idea of you know, our one of our, I guess, collective nightmares. You know, the if we take the Borg scenario from Star Trek or something like that, that we're mm-hmm. actually, you know, moving into this kind of hive mind that actually is connected. I mean, many people out there are scared, I guess, or concerned in regards to the fact that we are, you know, being able to develop technologies that connects the brain directly to the internet. We have the, of course, mm-hmm. the microchip going in people and so forth. And this would really kind of develop the whole idea of the electronic hive mind, or the insectoid being developed here. Do you see this as a concern at all?
Well, I do. I think that the key word that you used there was the fear. It's like people's fears will, you know, I mean, it's good to think ahead and to be aware of, you know, possibly steering yourself in a direction. But fear itself is, you know, usually a sign that you're just not ready to make the leap. It's usually your friend, fear. You're saying to yourself, here's an area where I feel scared, and then you can realize, well, that's exactly the area where I need to develop myself. So the fear about the future is basically, you know, the fear about evolving, the fear about accepting what we're becoming. And there are these dark scenarios that could play out, but I think they're our friend in a way. And if we learn to just look at them from the right angle, mm-hmm. we'll realize that the fear itself is just highlighting the areas that we need to just, you know, be careful with, and then we can move on.
Sure, I totally agree. That's an interesting way of looking at it. So, I mean, do you think that we are going in this, area? Let's say incorporating technology into, you know, our own, I guess, taking our, you know, the evolution of our species in our own hands. In that regard, that we are able to, you know, improve the body and even the mind, I guess, in that sense. Do you think we are moving in that area?
Wow. Like, I can't, if I try and project forward, like, I keep feeling like it gets like a smaller and smaller distance that I can project forward to, because it just becomes so difficult, because there's so many factors changing the whole system at such a speed.
Yeah.
That to make any kind of prediction about the future when it comes to technologies and, you know, the how that'll interact with our bodies, and I just can't tell because
yeah.
I feel like in the 50s people were projecting forward and seeing, oh, we'll have flying cars and this and that. But now nobody or very few people would seriously sit and project, you know, what will the world look like in 50 years? Because you just can't do it. There's just the world looks entirely different if you're removing yourself a bit. If you're in the flow, you can't notice it. But if you just move your head a little bit out of the flow, you can sort of see how fast things are changing,
mm-hmm.
and to make predictions about what it'll look like. And even like a year from now, I have no idea. It was something like Wikipedia jumped out of nowhere and changed my entire life, and YouTube jumped out of nowhere and changed my life. Like, I mean, it sounds dramatic, but being able to watch documentaries and people's blog posts online, video blogs, etc., just it's an amazing way of getting information, and it's taking the power out of people like CNN's hands. And when we take the eyeballs, like Timothy Leary was saying, the eyeballs away from CNN, then you're sort of what people believe sort of creates the texture of the reality. So if people are no longer looking at CNN to create the texture of their reality, but looking at, you know, individually tailored works of art by friends on blogs or who knows, whatever you're into, you know, then you're starting to inform your own reality and not this fear machine-like crazy juggernaut of death that they're representing on CNN. Because I think that's sort of one of the points that why they keep generating these fear things like 9/11 is to keep you looking at CNN and to keep you thinking about, you know, the consensus reality trance, because then they have your eyeballs and they can make you create this mundane reality that they want you to be enslaved in. They want you to think, you know, it's a good idea to wake up and go turn widgets at the factory when it's laughable. You have this infinite universe at your disposal, but you have to believe in this, you know, mundane existence. It's just crap. It's nonsense.
Sure.
I think we're starting to wake up, or at least some of us are.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I'm thinking back on this comment in the movie V for Vendetta, when you know, the main Big Brother up on the screen there tells, you know, his ministers basically that we need to, you know, remind the people, you know, why they need us, and that's kind of the idea I think you're expressing here, that we, with fear and with you know, threats, basically are trying to keep, as you say, the eyes peeled on them and focused on them, and we're going to turn to them again for, you know, security or for the sense of you know, being informed. But do you see it as a possibility that I mean, let's say that more and more people are turning away from the mainstream media in that sense, but still many people return to it in regards to that we still, you know, report on things that pop up in the mainstream media, and we have the, you know, all the reporters out there, and I've heard, you know, I mean, things being expressed that if people don't, you know, buy the newspapers or you know, whatever, subscribe to the news channels or whatnot, that these will actually go, you know, out of business in that sense, and then we have, you know, a collapse of the information network in that sense. Or do you think that people are going to be the reporters in the future?
Yeah. I think the individual nodes, in a sense, which, you know, are the constitutes us, you know, the individual intelligent nodes of this hive mind that is evolving, we're going to become smart enough, intelligent enough, and connected enough to spread the information without a centralized source like CNN, you know, which is obviously and completely hopelessly corrupt and, you know, subverted with interests that are so far beyond the common man that it just, you know, it's laughable. We are going to become a network amongst ourselves. It's already, in a very big sense, it is that way. Any relevant information that's very specifically relevant to me, I will find out in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
If my mother dies on the other side of the planet, I will know within 10 minutes. Mm. Somebody will SMS somebody, who will email somebody, who will fax somebody, or whatever they will use. I will find out very soon.
Sure.
When Robert Anton Wilson died, I was in South Africa. I wasn't on the internet, and two people text messaged me within 10 minutes of each other, like from different parts of the world, you know, about it, because they specifically knew that it was relevant to me, because they know I have a big respect for the individual. So our networks are becoming our news source. And yes, we are still going to need people to have cameras overseas and an infrastructure to do that. But it's becoming that an individual with a, you know, cell phone who you trust at the scene can become, and your network of trust will be your news service. You know your friend, so you trust what he sends you, instead of somebody like Rupert Murdoch, who you've never met and who is just rich and greedy and wants to, I don't know, do some evil stuff, it seems.
So, I mean, do you think that this is the little brother in, you know, in regards to it being Big Brother before?
Yeah, we're evolving a network, a new higher organization, that it's not visible yet, so people think like it's chaos. It's something which I've heard on your show come up numerous times in different contexts. It's like the water is boiling, the the entire planet is like frothing with all this energy, and it looks like chaos, but it's actually a higher organizational matrix that's evolving, and it will come out of this chaotic period something which will allow us to be able to cope with this new level of information spreading all over everything, and this interaction that we're having, you know, the ability to talk to you in Sweden like on Skype is, you know, it's just, it's amazing.
Yeah, technology. It is.
We're evolving the techniques and the what we need to be able to navigate it successfully without going crazy, because if we don't, as a planet, you know, we do have the scary situation of blowing ourselves up, because all these belief systems are now being thrown together on the internet into one melting pot. And the fear of, you know, realizing all the lies about your culture and your perceived identity could, you know, make you just sort of hit the abort button, and which would, I would see as just a metaphor for, you know, nuclear holocaust on the planet.
Yeah.
And, but I don't think that'll happen. I think that's just another fear that we'll overcome.
Yeah, sure. You know, one thing that comes to mind is the classical biblical, you know, expression of the apocalypse, which I understand basically means the unveiling. And this is, I guess, what you are talking about in regards to, you know, all the information that is coming available. You spoke about YouTube and Wikipedia and all this. That this is a time of where everything, all of the secrets and so forth, are coming to the surface, or the information availability of the information, at least, is coming to the surface. And all you have to do in order to find something is to have a curious mind and you know, having the will to actually, you know, do a little bit of searching, and you'll have the answers, basically, at least in, you know, in much shorter time now than we have any, you know, in any time previously in at least modern history. So
yeah, definitely.
So do you think that this is the biblical apocalypse?
In a sense, it is. I bet you there are a lot of people out there with a heavy religious belief system who could look at the world around them and, you know, maybe in a way see an apocalypse.
Yeah.
Taking the relevant information and going, yeah, this is the apocalypse. And another person would look at it and go, wow, this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Look at it.
Sure.
It's beautiful.
Sure, absolutely.
I think you'll see whatever you're looking for at this period as we head up towards, I suppose, you know, don't necessarily believe in 2012, but I do feel like it's a way of explaining a certain idea about the coming eschaton, or the point where we all transcend, or the internet becomes aware and all our thoughts are suddenly lit up in the supernova. I change about that kind of thing every day.
Yeah.
How I feel about it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I see it as I guess singularity, basically, and I think that mirrors the idea that you talked about earlier, that it seems to be impossible to kind of you know, imagine yourself beyond a certain point into the future, which very well might be, you know, at 2012 in that sense, because after that point, things takes off in a, you know, in a myriad of, you know, different directions, basically. And this is one of the ideas that I think that Carl Johan Kellerman, that I talked about earlier, actually expressed in his books in regards to consciousness and awareness, actually, you know, basically, you know, giving a second birth, basically. And I guess that this is the singularity that many people, and including, you know, transhumanists and so forth, actually are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that is, you mentioned, of course, again, there 2012, but do you think do you think that it's important at all to view this in a, you know, linear time table, so to speak, in regards to focusing on 2012?
Well, I think what's happening with 2012, or my current belief system about 2012, is that we've been played a trick by some master Zen game players like Terence McKenna, you know, who was one of the big pushers of 2012.
Yeah.
Sort of looked, projected into the future a date and made it this huge thing. And now we're all focusing our energy on it, and we very well might make it happen just because what we believe shapes the texture of our reality. So if we're all focusing on 2012, that could be like it could literally become something, because if everybody's expecting something to happen at 2012, something will probably happen.
Yeah.
And to me, I mean, even if nothing happens on 2012, that would be one of the most fascinating things ever. It would be like the least likely thing to happen would be nothing, and that would fascinate me even more. So
yeah, yeah.
I can't personally lose in it, but I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah. I spoke about Terence McKenna, of course. You went into that a little bit in one of your recent articles in regards to time wave zero. Would like to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Well, yeah, the time wave, which is sort of it's a complex thing to explain, but I mean, Terence McKenna literally took mushrooms and then spoke to aliens, and they told him, he has other metaphors for this, obviously, but told him to look into the I Ching, and he found this pattern in a mathematical theorem, which ended up playing itself. He mapped the entire evolution of the history of the universe and found that the end date came up to, you know, 2012, the same as the Mayans. And the next peak, the biggest peak in habit, which is when there's lots of disorder on the planet, it's, is this year. So it's possible, if Terence McKenna's theory was, you know, correct, that this year could be a very traumatic year in the movement down to 2012. But it's just a metaphor, and I don't think one should, you know, sit and hope for horrible things to happen or big disastrous events. But it seems implied by his theory, at least, that this year should be a very exciting year when it comes to events happening on the planet.
Any ideas?
Well, I mean, we just recently, I don't like to speculate on future events, but we just recently saw, again, this Iran thing come up with these British soldiers being captured there. And if they're looking for an inn, you know, that could definitely be it. You know, this scenario could definitely turn out to be another war, which could escalate into something. But I hope that won't happen. Really, I don't like that.
I just put up on my website in regards to an article that I was we were sent from Webster Tarpley. I don't know if you've seen this yet, but this is something called Operation Bite, and this is actually he elaborates on Russian military sources that actually warn that the U.S. will are planning a sneak attack on Iran.
Yes.
April 6th already this year.
Yeah, I read the headline on,
yeah,
on
did.
Your
yeah
on your website just a few minutes ago. Yeah.
Sure. So I mean, again, I don't know. We've been handed these kinds of reports since going back to 2 years, basically. I mean, ever since the time of Scott Ritter talking about, you know, a possible invasion of Iran and so forth. But what makes this more interesting is actually, I think, in regards to the recent events with the British Marines that have been captured.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't
know. There is another thing to keep your eyes on. Like in 1984, you know, George Orwell explains this sort of constant state of being at war with nobody, you know, how you can make it seem like there's always an enemy, and you can change it from, you know, SARS to bird flu to Iran.
Yeah.
And, you know, you maybe never have to have anything happen if you just keep switching it and keep, you know, dropping hints as to it's about to happen and just keep people guessing and keep them on their toes. So
yeah.
I definitely felt that when bird flu was doing the rounds, that it was just this way of keeping fear in people's minds and keeping them their minds on the consensus reality trance by having them stare at the newspapers and stare at CNN.
Yeah.
And I think they'll keep trying these techniques and until the game's over, they'll there will probably be more events like 9/11 if we continue to ignore, you know, CNN and the, you know, people who are, in, you know, not in charge of our world. I don't like to think the Illuminati or any secret society is in charge of anything. I believe they exert control and influence. I do not believe that they, not control, they exert influence.
Sure.
I do not believe they control anything.
Sure.
I just think they have massive amounts of influence.
Yeah.
Which is definitely something to be aware of.
And I guess the influence in that regard, if you're able to push the right buttons, so to speak, you can direct events or what have you in certain areas which actually might be in enough to, you know, get what you want out of a situation or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, that's the thing. That's the thing. It's like playing billiards. You can get the ball into the hole with the other balls, but you can't just make the ball appear into the other hole.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's there are still. These guys are still bounded by laws, I guess that's what you're saying.
Yes.
Here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Physical laws. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. You know, one thing I've been pondering upon also a little bit is, as we spoke about earlier, in regards to, you know, having. I guess I want to dive into a little bit about inspiration in that sense, and what the source of inspiration might be, and I've been pondering upon this. And others as well, of course, this is something I've been picking up on, that artists and so forth, you know, musicians, writers, you know, artists like yourselves who are you know, playing around with the higher consciousness of you know, our universe, basically, that these person, these artists actually are, you know, mediums in some sense, that there actually are more natural mediums, that they might not, you know, sit down and do a seance in order to, you know, contact something in that sense, but inspiration is something that I'm intrigued with in regards to where it is and what it is and where it might come from and so forth. Have you thought about this at all in regards to artists?
Well, definitely. It reminds me of like if a person is trying to learn to do the perfect stroke in golf, you know, the one that seems to really work, it's with tennis and any sport, and it's the same with art. The when you're the most successful is the one where it's almost like it was no effort, and it's you weren't thinking about anything. It just something just went through you. It's when you lose that sense of self, that ego or that identity, when you can learn to step outside of yourself, that the energy flows. And when things start, you know, just becoming natural, like drawing or creating or coming up with an idea, it's usually when you're quiet and you've managed to put everything out of your mind that something will just pop in from nowhere.
Yeah.
It's like it's born out of nothing, which is a mystical insight. And it's a lot of these concepts that we've been talking about, it's sort of we use clumsy words to describe subjects that are beyond words.
Exactly.
But,
yeah.
It can be done, but you know, you have to realize that there are limitations to understanding things with words, and there's sort of a lot of these concepts are internal things which I think if somebody has thought about them before, they will resonate with that individual, and you will understand it.
Totally, I totally agree. And this, of course, is something that I want to dive into, you know, in our next segment. But because I'd love to continue with you here, we haven't, you know, gotten into your work basically at all here.
Right,
at this point.
Yeah.
But we're going to do that. You know, but before we do that, getting into symbols and movies and all this, you know, do you think that being in influence or being in this, being in the zone, so to speak, is this something that we can, if we're not able to do it, do you think that this is something that we can learn? And if we are able to get into it, do you think that this is something we can become better at?
Yes, I do think so. It's like dancing, you know. Alan Watts again has described this sort of process about where when a child is innocent and they're dancing, it's beautiful. But then as they become older and they become self-aware, like people are looking at them, they'll become less of a natural, beautiful dancer, and you'll have to send them off to school for years and years before they can again get that natural, beautiful dancing happening in front of a crowd. And it's sort of that there's this interesting thing about, you know, not being self-aware and being creative. And it's something that you can learn to do on command. It's like somebody who has to perform on stage, like a comedian, you know, has to learn to be creative while being observed or while, you know, being self-aware. And you can do it and get better at it. It's practice, like everything else. You have to do it every day if you want to get good at it.
To be in the moment and also to be
in the moment.
And also, I guess, be kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Being, you know, bold enough to, you know, dare to do it or dare to believe in yourself that you're able to, you know, do it, I guess.
It's belief. It really seems like if you believe something and you put your will into it, the doors start opening. And if you follow your intuition, you will, if you persevere, you will get to an answer.
That's beautiful. Isn't it? Yeah.
It sounds like, you know, NLP or like empty sort of word, but people have sort of stolen those ideas. You know, people like, you know, Scientologists and L. Ron Hubbard, they'll tell you things like that and it'll seem like, you know, wonderful. It can change your life to think those things, but they'll make them empty and hollow by adding on all these, you know, they have bad intentions, really. Those sort of simple truths are their reality. Belief and will and intent, you know, can change your life.
Absolutely. And this is something that is very difficult when you meet also, I think, people who got a sense of helplessness towards, you know, life in general, that you know, I see many people who, or meet many people who have this kind of, you know, idea that, you know, the universe in that sense is something that, you know, is actually working, you know, against them or something that, but it can be so hard to kind of, you know, relay this message or this, you know, philosophy, I guess, that we've been speaking about here, that everyone is able to, you know, tap into this wonderful world of the mystic and of the overmind, and that, you know, people are not helpless in regards to what they do with their lives and where they're headed, and with will and with confidence you can do anything you want. I mean, do you experience this, you know, in regards to people surrounding you also?
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people who are, you know, having difficult times and trying. I will have many days where I'm not so positive and open-minded, and it feels like the world is conspiring against you. But these are usually teachers. These are thick trials that you have to overcome so that you'll be ready to weather what's coming next. And it's not. I don't think it's nefarious. I think it's benevolent. I think it's basically love. I think the universe is essentially love, and it sounds so like hippie and corny to say it.
Yeah.
But I feel it's true. The universe is love and bliss at every moment, but we're just not fully ready to accept it. So we have all these fears and insecurities, and we keep working through them and having trials and dark moments. That's part of the growth process that we need so that we can become, you know, cosmic citizens or illuminated individuals or I don't know, whatever else is happening.
I totally agree. I think that's a beautiful way to put it, you know, in regards to that. And this is also difficult, I think, for you know, people to ponder upon in regards to that. A negative experience in itself is not a negative experience, and you don't have to feel down over the fact that you are down, because this is just as you say, a tremendous opportunity to learn and to grow and to, you know, get over something. I think you put it beautifully.
Yeah, and then to maybe be able to help the next person who comes along and has the same experience, and maybe your experience will be able to help that person. Because if we're all one, maybe you have to go through something so that you can help another part of yourself. Yeah. Or maybe it's like people who are reflecting on like, how if everything is love and bliss, are there things like murder and rape and robbery and all these really dark things? And, you know, if we're all one, then maybe that horrible experience you had is something that you needed to be so that you would be stronger later in your life for some other trial or to help another person. And it's really difficult. And it also, again, it ties into not thinking of things in good and bad.
Exactly, you know,
in these extremes.
And these
because are, love, in a way, is not – the opposite of love is not evil or hate or something like that. Love is more unity. It's oneness. It's it's not – it doesn't really have an opposite. It's –
Very interesting. Yeah, and exactly. I totally agree. I think that these, also many of these subjects are so emotionally loaded that people are, you know, almost unable to just, you know, sit around and talk about them for what they actually might be, because they're so quickly, you know, emotionally involved. So just as you say, being able to learn from someone actually being murdered, is it's almost like it's a dirty thing. But I think that it's important to view these kinds of things in many different perspectives, and not only being carried away by your own emotions to that, you know, experience or what has happened to a person and so forth, but be able to transcend that and look beyond it and actually try to seek and discover if there is a meaning behind that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
You know, this is an excellent discussion. I certainly want to continue this. We're kind of out of time for this segment. But before Jack, we finish off here, I want you to do two things for us. Of course, first of all, tell us about your blog, either all of them or just the Brave New World Order. And I want you also to talk about your artwork, because you have a different blog with you know, t-shirts and merchandise and so forth, in regards to the excellent and beautiful artwork that you have been, you know, developing. And I think it's just wonderful, and I want, you know, people to know how they can get that and support your work, of course.
Okay. Well, my blog is The Brave New World Order, and you can get links to all my other blogs and my artwork, etc., at thebravenewworldorder.blogspot.com. And yeah, I've got all my drawings up. There's a link to view all my drawings. I try and do a drawing per post, just to sort of an overview of all the elements in the blog. In the blog posts, I'll try and combine them into one piece to sort of help as a visual guide to it. And I've also just recently put up the opportunity for people who are interested to buy t-shirts and my original artwork to help support my work if they want to do that and if they like the work. And I've been drawing for years, and it's another way I've found to incorporate my skills into, you know, getting my word out there. So
And I think it's beautiful. Do continue your artwork. It's magnificent. So everyone, do check it out, thebravenewworldorder.blogspot.com, and we will continue with Jake in the subscriber section now, but we will take a short break and we will be right back. We are going to continue talking with Jake Kutsey for our subscribers now. We are going to dive deeper into Jake's work and his interpretations of the 9/11 event, some of his new work on that, and also get into some of his video material. The destruction of the Solomon's Brothers building, or World Trade Center Building 7, and the new Freedom Tower is something that we'll also get into, and the completion of that, of course, in 2012. We'll also get into some excellent stuff about symbolism, the octagon, and the connection with the Great Pyramids, and a whole lot more. So do join us in the subscriber section. If you're currently not subscribing and are interested in doing so, either click on subscribe on our front page at redicecreations.com, or on sign up if you're in our radio section or our radio archive. If you like what we do here, this is the best way to help and support this radio show. And for you guys who don't have a credit card or don't want to use PayPal, check out our alternative payment methods. You don't need a credit card to sign up. Thank you for tuning into the program, and thanks to producer Fredrik Palmgren. We will be back on Sunday with Kent from the Kentroversy Papers, dissecting Hillary Clinton and a whole lot more. So heads up on that. This is Henrik Palmgren. We will speak soon. Take care.